How long was I asleep? When did we plan to meet? Have you been waiting long for me?
Our next guest on Downtown is a multi-Grammy award-winning singer-songwriter, author, working on a Broadway musical based on the film Norma Rae, and she'll be appearing on the Mountain Stage Show at the Berklee Performance Center in Boston, along with Kathy Mattea and Loudon Wainwright III this Sunday night. We're talking about one of our favorite people to have here on the show, Roseanne Cash, and we caught up with Roseanne earlier today down in Austin, Texas, where she's getting ready for a concert appearance tomorrow night. I was looking back, it's been just a little over 2 years since we talked to you, which is way too long. It was right before the election last time when we were talking about to crawl into the promised land. And a few things have happened in those last 2 years, huh?
First, that went by really fast. Mm. I would have never guessed it was 2 years since I talked to you. Yeah, and a lot's happened.
What do you think? Did we do we save democracy, or have we just delayed its demise?
What a question. I want to take your poli-sci class, by the way, Rich. I think we are in the process of saving it. There you go.
All right. That's good. That's encouraging. I like that. Was I being completely naive when I thought, and I may even said to students, speaking of that class, that I didn't imagine that the court would actually overturn Roe v. Wade and do some of the things that they've done?
I never really thought that too either. And I mean, it's a shocker, you know, we're now going to federalize women's bodies. I mean, just think about that. This is Taliban style stuff.
Well, but we have so many laws that regulate men's bodies. Oh, wait, no, we don't. I have enjoyed your work on Twitter for so many years, and as Elon takes it down the drain, what's the future there? And what did it offer you?
Well, every day now I go, should I stay? Should I go? Mm. You know, every time he posts something incredibly appalling, I go, I should leave. And then I see, you know, a lot of friends are still there. A lot of media people I still follow. I don't know. What it meant to me in the beginning was like a cafe society. Is that you talked about really interesting things. I've met really interesting people. A couple of people I have, quote, met on Twitter have become actual IRL friends.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I have read the most interesting things and felt a connection. I mean, that still exists, but it's getting cloudy. Mm. And, you know, I think there's going to be a tipping point for me.
I like something you said in an interview not too long ago. You said, my political beliefs are empathy.
Did I say that?
You
That's
did.
Pretty good. I'll repeat that. I got to remember some of this stuff.
All right,
last time I talked to you.
I have to tell you this. I was so blown away. Speaking of things you've said in interviews, I think I might have made a little gasp sound when I heard you talking about a song that has always been, if not my favorite, certainly in the top two or three. It's always meant so much to me. And the story you told about the only living boy in New York.
Oh, yeah. That, it's Paul Simon, obviously. And that song, when I first met John, my husband, shortly after I met him in 1990, he gave me this mixtape on a cassette tape, and Only Living Boy in New York was on there. And this thought went through my mind, I'm going to marry this guy.
Hey, I would marry him. If he put that on a mixtape for me, I'd marry him.
Well, he had put on Paul Brady's Arthur McBride and Paul Simon's Only Living Boy in New York. And I said, you know, I just thought my heart just melted. And so that, you know, I did marry him. I did marry him eventually. And I, a couple of years ago, you know, I had this little grandson who's now four. And when he was a baby, I played him Only Living Boy in New York. And he sat in his high chair with his eyes wide open and they filled with tears. And he was stock still listening to this song. And I was overcome by this feeling of time circling back on itself. And, you know, the cellular makeup of what moves us, you know, that lineage and the connection of songs and the power of a single song to unite people was so powerful.
Well, I love the story and that song. I get it completely there. Your TED Talk, Rhythm and Rhyme of Memory, was so wonderful. And what music touches us at such a fundamental level. And I love what you talked about in the fact that music is not bound by linear time.
Yeah, well, exactly what I was just saying about Only Living Boy, connecting my husband before I married him and my little tiny grandson. Yeah, and also, I mean, just literally going back to my Celtic ancestors and those melancholy melodies, you know, there seem to somehow reside in my bloodstream. But there's a language that music has that's not bound by time, you know, that speaks to us over centuries and generations and through our ancestry. I mean, this all sounds very grand, but the things that aren't linear are the things that move me the most. Love, music.
And when you're writing, obviously as a listener and as someone who appreciates music, you feel that in a certain way, but I have to think as a writer, that has to be very freeing too, that suddenly past, future, present, they all come together in some sort of way that has to feel like magic when it's really working.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, that's the mystery at the heart of songwriting, or of any writing, I think. And it's like Thornton Wilder said, you know, time isn't a river. It's actually, I can't remember the exact quote, but we step in and out of it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I have found so many times in writing a song, one of your listeners is going to know the exact quote and call you up. And when they do, will you please send me what the exact quote is? But I have found so many times in writing that, like I've said, they're like postcards from the future. You know, you do step out of linear time and reveal things to yourself about your own future.
I want to talk about dreams a little bit. You had talked with us, I think last time you were on, about the dream you had involving Linda Ronstadt. You've written about the dream you had at 13 with your mother and your grandmother. And I think you wrote in your book that you had read along the way that we have five big dreams in our life. Have you had them all yet?
I hope not. I hope. I don't want to check that last box for a while, Rich. I mean, I didn't make that up. That's Carl Jung who said that a person has five big dreams in their life. Yeah, maybe I've had three or four. Yikes.
No, three's good. Let's call it three.
Let's call it three.
What's your relationship with the road these days? You wrote a wonderful piece in the midst of the pandemic about, I don't know, would you call it a love-hate relationship with the road and touring?
At this point, yeah. I mean, I love the audiences. I hate the travel. I'm tired of it, you know? I'm tired of dragging myself through airports and hotel after hotel and not actually getting to stay in some place, but like just, you know, walking through a hotel and a venue and an airport, rinse and repeat. That's getting old to me and I'm getting old to it. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, there's going to be a tipping point for this too, because I love the audiences so much and the music and being part of that chemical reaction. But, you know, at some point, it's going to be too much. I actually am slowing down in the next year. I'm not booking anything after June, and I'm going to see how it all feels.
See Roseanne while you can. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying right now. Hey, this, speaking of time passing quickly, 35 years since the release of King's Record Shop. I don't know how that time went by so quickly. But did that album really begin a new direction for you and your, not just recording, but writing? I know from your book that the fact that you didn't have as many of your own songs on that album pushed you to write even more.
You know, Rich, I think that rather than a beginning, that was a culmination, that album. That was a culmination of everything I had done before and as good as I could do it. And then the next album, Interiors, was the beginning of something else. Mm. So I'm really proud of King's Record Shop. I also can't believe it's been 35 years, but it was another life, you know?
Right. Four number one songs from the album. My favorite song on the album was one that it wasn't released as a single, a great song that you wrote called The Real Me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a sweet song. I mean, that was written by a much younger version of me. But it's sweet. I appreciate that song.
Do you still think of Sigourney Weaver when you bring up the album? I love the connection there.
It's so funny that your audience is going, what's he talking about? I can't believe you brought that up, because I was thinking about that just yesterday. That I'll just briefly say what it is that when we were mixing the album, there was a giant screen above the console, and we had Alien playing on a loop, the movie Alien playing on a loop. So, and then we would sometimes look up and just repeat a bit of dialogue and then go back to the work. And so, yeah, in some ways, Sigourney is connected with that album. I did tell her that once, and she looked very confused.
We're talking with Roseanne Cash here on Downtown. Well, here's another blast from the past. Next year, 20 years since the release of Rules of Travel. Whoosh.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. I love that album so much. So many great songs on there. Many by you, but you chose wisely from other artists. I love the song that Craig Northey wrote, Beautiful Pain.
I love that too. And Sheryl Crow sang on that song. I felt a little embarrassed because John and I asked Craig if he would write something for me. And then he wrote Beautiful Pain. And I thought, oh my God, he thinks that, you know, I'm some kind of navel gazer who's obsessed with her own melancholy. Oh, he's right.
I love your duet with Steve Earle on that too. Man, you guys work so well together.
Yeah, he and I, in some ways, he's like an annoying brother to me. He and I always get in arguments, always. But, you know, that song, the way we did it together, I thought was really sweet too. That was quite a while ago. Oh, here comes my husband. Say hello to Rich Kimball.
Morning,
Rich
John.
Kimball. How's it going, man?
Wonderful. How are you, John?
I'm excellent.
Glad
he went down to get us breakfast.
I went down to get my wife's breakfast is what I really did.
That's commitment. That's what keeps a relationship going strong after all these years.
That's right. True. Coffee and, you know, doing errands for me.
Well, while John's there, I do want to go back to ask another question about Rules of Travel. But while John's there, what's the secret, if there is a secret? How do you keep a relationship going that's not only a personal relationship, clearly, but a professional relationship, too? Do you reach that point where you get tired and say, God, I live with this guy. I have to work with him, too, or vice versa, John? When she's not keeping the beat?
You know, Rich, my wife has all the answers. So I'll just let her talk about it. And that's, I think, it pretty much sums it up.
Well, I think that's the secret right there.
In a microcosm, right. No, I mean, you know what? We've learned how to fight. That's what the key is.
We fight better.
We fight a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't hold on to things. We, at some point, we always start laughing at ourselves now when we're fighting. We used to take it so seriously, you know, and also we're really, really good friends. I think that, that's the key.
Time helps and perspective and yeah. Getting a little older helps you understand what's important and what's not such a big deal. Maybe just an annoyance that will pass.
That's right. Yeah. And also time becomes more precious as you're.
Yeah. Some annoyances are just bigger than others, I guess. You know, it depends on your perspective. No, I think what it is that you realize after a point, no matter what the subject matter of the fight is, it's a fight you've had 20 million times before. So
you could number them.
And then you just start to laugh.
I want to go back to rules of travel and talk, of course, about September when it comes. And it's good that John is there because I think it was John that suggested that you get your dad to record on that.
Yeah, he was. You know, that song is really, John is the one who engineered it in more ways than one, because I had written the lyrics and just left them on a table and kind of forgot about them in our workspace. And he found them and he said, "What is this?" And I said, some lyrics I wrote, and he wrote the music to it. And then he said, if there was ever a song or a time for you to do a duet with your dad, this is the song and this is the time. And it wasn't that long before my dad died. And,
in September, right?
In September. It ended up being very prescient. Yeah. It was sweet. You know, I went down to Nashville and went to my dad's studio, and he wasn't well. But he went over to the studio and sang it. And then as he was, he really got into it when he was singing it. And at the end, he said, "Now you take that back to John. And if he says it's not good enough, you know, I'll do it again." I said, "Dad, it's good enough."
Now, do I remember right that he wanted to see the lyrics before he would agree to record it?
Oh, yeah. I'll have to read the lyrics first. Well, you know, consummate artist. He's not going to do anything just because I'm his kid.
Hey, we've made a mutual friend since the last time we talked. Not long after we talked with you last time, we had Van Dyke Parks coming on the show, and he's been on a bunch with us, and he said, "Hey, you've got to talk to a friend of mine who's moving to Maine, and it's your friend Joe Henry."
Yeah, he and Mel just did move to Maine, and he loves it up there. It seems a little isolated for my taste, but the pictures he sent me are gorgeous. I just saw him this past summer. You know, Rodney does this songwriting camp, and Joe and I were both part of that.
Well, he's great. We loved having him on the show. Need to get him back on again. But by the way, should we be calling you Dr. Cash now that you have that degree from Arkansas State?
You should. I've got one from Berkeley, too, so you can call me Dr. Doctor.
All right. I've been having this little pain in my shoulder. If you can do anything about that.
I'm having a pain in my knee. Can you do anything about that?
What's the status of Norma Rae? I think I saw that you did the casting and were doing some workshopping earlier in the fall.
We did. We did a 5-week workshop and with full cast and choreographer. You know, it was really fun and it was revealing. So we now know what changes to make. We did get some interest from producers and venues. So next step, you know, I mean, it's a long process. It's sometimes it takes 10 years to get something to stage, but we're in it for the long haul. It's really fun and interesting. In the beginning, I said, I'll never do this again. Now I say, I can't wait to do this again.
Who did the book?
John Wideman. Okay. A legend.
Absolutely. I was watching the great Bruce Springsteen interview with Howard Stern, and he was talking about retirement. And he said, yeah, I'm not going to retire, but I'm not going to be doing 3.5 hour shows when I'm 90 years old. But he talked about his Broadway show. Would that be the kind of thing that you would ever consider doing, a chance to stay close to home and tell stories and sing your songs, but not have to travel and yet still have that accessibility to an audience?
You've been talking to my manager, because he's brought that up to me a few times. Well, John and I went to see Springsteen on Broadway, and it was profoundly moving. I mean, he just does it so well. He's an artist at the height of his mastery. After having seen that, I would feel like such a Philistine to try to do something like that myself. But, you know, maybe in 10 years, I would feel confident enough to try that.
Let's talk about your show Sunday night. You're on the Mountain Stage in Boston, the Mountain Stage show with our friend Kathy Mattea, Loudon Wainwright III, Allie McGurk, Molly Tuttle, and Golden Highway. Pretty talented group there getting together.
Yeah, I mean, and Loudon, we've been friends with Loudon for many, many years, so that's going to be fun to see him. And Kathy Mattea, I've also known for decades. And Molly Tuttle, man, I mean, doesn't she give you hope for the future? She's so amazing. This is going to be a fun show, I think. I've done Mountain Stage a few times, and like I said to you, I'm going to start winding down a bit from touring after middle of next year. And when they asked me to do Mountain Stage, I thought that's one thing that I would want to do again. I have to say yes to this.
Well, it's going to be a great show. It's coming up 7 o'clock Sunday night at the Berkeley Performance Space down in Boston, a Mountain Stage with Kathy Mattea and Roseanne. How is being a grandmother? Is it still everything you hoped it would be?
Oh my God, it's the best thing in the world. It reinforces your optimism about everything.
I like the sound of that. I'll never get there because I'm 64 with an 8-year-old son. So if I live to be a grandfather, then that boy's going to have a little talking.
Wait a minute. We could do a little math here. He could like find the right person at age 20. You know, oof. You could. Oof.
I got to get him through third grade first. That's the next step.
Yeah, that's harder.
Absolutely. Well, Roseanne, it's wonderful to talk with you. As always, thanks for making time for us on the road. Thank John for jumping in as well.
Thank you, John.
Welcome.
It's good to talk to you, Rich. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
All right. Let's not wait 2 years to do it again.
Absolutely.